Well, I think we can all agree that's how you start a season, and welcome to this week's Total Rugby League show, available via TotalRL.com, Spotify, iTunes and Audio Boom. And round the table, we're joined by the marvellous Doug Thompson.
Hello.
Matthew Shaw is here.
Hello.
And Martin Sadler's here. Welcome, everyone. What a start to the season that was, gentlemen. I mean, it wasn't all down to the shot clock, I'm sure, but it was great. And later in the show, it was a particularly good start for the London Broncos, and we'll be catching up with Phil Parry from BBC Radio London. Championship also kicked off, so we've got Gareth Walker coming on later to review that, and we're going to be joined at the end of the show by the Oldham Rugby League Heritage Trust, because they've got some wonderful news regarding the heritage of the sport. But let's start off with Super League. It wasn't all down to the shot clock, Doug, but it was a marvellous opening weekend to the season. I mean, what was the highlight for you?
Well, funnily enough, I'm a Wakefield supporter, but it was probably London winning, you know, because it was a massive thing for London. You know, we all want to see a successful London team in Super League. They've sort of come back in by surprise almost, haven't they, really? You know, nobody expected them to win the £1 million game. And maybe this time, because they've come in a more understated way, hopefully they'll do better, you know. And that was a fantastic start for them. It was a good crowd. I saw loads of tweets about people saying how much they enjoyed the ground down there. You know, a lot of Wakefield fans went, and despite the result, enjoyed the day out. And what a great thing to be able to go down to London, have a good day out, watch your team at a nice venue. Hopefully that's the start of lots of good games for London and successful games.
Now, Matthew, you can't say London. What was the highlight for you without saying London?
Probably the Hull derby. Oh, it's got to be, hasn't it? What a game. What a game it was. Maybe not the most skillful game we saw over the weekend, but drama, atmosphere. Yeah, it had everything that a rugby league game needs. We say this a lot in this office. You don't need to have the highest quality standard in rugby league. If it's tight, it's great entertainment no matter what. And that is exactly what the Hull derby was. It looked like it might be a runaway early on, didn't it, with Hull FC flying out of the blocks, but KR responded really well and got the win in front of a sellout crowd. I think if I was to generalise, I think the crowds were one of the highlights. If you compare them, they were really good. Probably the Saints Wigan one not selling out was the biggest disappointment, to be honest, even though it was still a good crowd. But yeah, I agree. It was a great weekend.
I mean, what is wrong with Northerners? It was freezing last week. No. What is wrong with you all? Anyway, Martin, I'm going to come to you now. I've circled something from your column this week. The last 7 days have probably been as good as any 7 days I can remember in the history of rugby league.
That's a bold statement.
Well, I think that's
and it's in bold as well. It's the opening paragraph.
I think that's absolutely true. You know, looking back at the last 7 days, let's remember we had the World Cup announcements, the venues for the World Cup, semi-final at Emirates Stadium, kicking off at Newcastle St James's Park. I think that's going to be quite remarkable, and it gives Rugby League a fantastic opportunity over the next few years to really consolidate its place within British sport. So there was that, but then of course the season kicked off, and we had a remarkable game at St Helens, tremendously competitive, and then the Hull derby. The interesting thing about the Hull derby, by the way, for me, well, one of the interesting things, is that Hull KR won with the aid of quite a lot of former Leeds Rhinos players. Mitch Garbutt had probably the best game I've ever seen him play, certainly playing like a player who felt he had something to prove after being moved on from Leeds to make way for one or two players coming in there. And, of course, Jimmy Kinehorse scoring that winning try. You know, what a tremendous way to finish off a game. So that was fantastic. But the highlight of the weekend, as we've already said, had to be the London Broncos. I mean, it's really interesting. I used to be very friendly with the old Wakefield player and coach, David Topliss, who sadly died a few years ago. And David always used to say that when he coached a side, the one thing he hated, if they were playing a side they were expected to beat, the one thing he hated was to score a couple of tries really early on. Because if that happened, he could guarantee that, you know, the side would become overconfident. And maybe that's what happened to Wakefield. They went 12-0 ahead after 10 minutes. They thought, oh, this is going to be really easy, no doubt. And then London just fought back against them. And, you know, Rugby League has got a new star, in my opinion, in a guy who sounds as though he should be on Coronation Street in Eddie Batty. But, you know, he's an incredible character. And, you know, I think if Rugby League has any PR ability whatsoever, it will make him a star on the London scene.
It's funny, isn't it? Because the way that I think Robert Elston pictures players and the sport being promoted is very serious, very slick, very professional.
I think it was, actually.
Well, but London have gone against have gone against the book a little bit, haven't they? You look at the GIFs and they're taking the mick out of each other, basically, aren't they?
Absolutely. It's fun. It's fun. That's the point.
Danny Ward.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's not just a Super League. Look at Anthony Gellin at the Halifax Fax Machines.
Let's not talk about that. But Danny Ward, he's fun. It's fun. Danny Ward just... I remember him playing Widnes in the qualifiers last year. It's a huge game, massively pivotal. And even Jamie Langley just looked like they're having a load of banter on the sideline, just watching it as fans with a couple of beers in their hand. It was brilliant.
But, you know, over the weekend, they got tremendous publicity in a lot of the national newspapers. A great article in The Standard with Danny Ward and two of his players, Jordan Abdul and Jay Pitts, with his arms around them, looking, you know, as though they were on top of the world. Mm. That's the sort of publicity we need, and as Matthew said, it's got to be fun. You know, all this thing about, you know, rugby league's a serious game for serious people. Crikey, you know, that doesn't work, I'm afraid. It's, you know, if we're going to attract young people, make it a fun game.
It's about enjoyment,
isn't it? Of course
it
is.
And it's thrown, the result as well has thrown the competition wide open, hasn't it?
Salford top of the league. Well, anyway, no one's mentioned that.
I was there.
We'll talk a bit more about London Broncos shortly when we'll be joined by Phil Parry from BBC Radio London. But we'll get into the specifics of some of the matches which took place. Obviously, the season kicked off on Thursday night, Saints against Wigan. The backdrop to that game, though, wasn't the best, with the points deduction. I mean, we recorded the show on Wednesday thinking we're ahead of the curve here. No chance of being caught out by breaking news on a Wednesday lunchtime. And then the points deduction news comes through. But on the pitch, Saints were mightily impressive, Doug.
Yeah, superb. I mean, you say it wasn't good in a way, but you could spin that round and say it was good, perhaps, you know, because it gets people talking, doesn't it? And it does seem quite a harsh penalty on Wigan. In terms of, you know, the actual scale of the increase of the salary cap. But like you say, superb performance by Saints and a great opening to the season, you know, a tight match, like it was with the Hull derby, never quite sure which way it's going to go. And really enjoyable.
And we obviously as well, I think it's been reported in League Express online anyway, about St Helens' drive to retain players. There's a lot of player retention going on at Saints. They are the bookies' favourites now. 16,500 there, the attendance. It was on Sky. The shot clock thing, I think it was Gareth who tweeted this. It was 10 minutes shorter this match than it was last season. And that's helpful, isn't it?
Well, it is, but, I mean, you know, it was also helped by the fact that there was only one reference to the video referee and there were no serious injuries that delayed the game. So it's not all down to the shot clock, but I thought the shot clock was a really interesting innovation. I'd had my doubts about it, but having seen it in operation, you know, I'm pretty happy with it, really, Ben, and we'll have to see how it goes, and we'll have to see. I suppose the real... The real test of how good it's been will be if the other code adopts it, and which I'm sure they will do.
You mentioned it on Twitter, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
Not riling anybody at all.
The other thing, though, is Sky needs to improve the graphic, don't they? They can't keep having this cutaway box with the scoreboard on it.
There's a couple of things, I think. Tactically, the game's evolved already.
Yes, that's right.
Teams aren't kicking into touch as much. That's been very evident. And the reason for that, of course, is it's all right kicking the ball 50 metres upfield to get a breather, but you've only got 30 seconds to get there. So actually, it's not really that much of a breather, really. So I think that's good. Interchanges have been obvious. You've got players like Alex Wormsley playing 25, 30-minute stints. Liam Watts played 62 minutes in the front row for Cass. Lee Mossop did the same for Salford. So that's evolved. I agree with the graphics. It just doesn't look great. There was another thing in the St Helens Wigan game, and I actually asked Rob Itzk about this directly. So Wigan did a short kickoff. Tommy Makinson went up for the ball and dropped it, but went down injured. I think he must have got cramped when he came down. Now the referee, Rob Itzk, started the shot clock. The interpretation of the rule is that if a player's down injured, you don't start a shot clock before that. If you start the shot clock and then someone goes down injured,
you carry on.
You carry on. And if it goes beyond that and then they're fit, they have to go off. So that was all a bit confusing there because I tweeted it. I thought that, well, hang on, Makinson went down and he's now fit. Shouldn't he be going off the pitch? But it's because he'd gone down before. So he wasn't feigning injury, so to speak. But it was, so there is a bit of a problem there. that's at another evolution. How many players did you see go down injured in games? At dropouts and scrums?
No. Not that many.
I can't remember an example.
No.
The other problem, and this is from a championship perspective. So I was at Batley Barrow. There's no shot clock visual, but the shot clock rules are in place. We had no clue how long
the fans can't see
what's... Yeah. It's communicated between the match commission and the referee, which is fine. The players on the pitch I could see. So Jamie Dallimore was at one scrum. I just remember him keep looking, asking the ref, how long? But it's no, from a visual spectacle point of view,
I just don't see the point of it.
Great.
I don't see the point of it in the championship. No, in that regard.
The thing is, you want the rules to be universal, but
yeah.
And even though they are on the pitch, it's not for a viewing audience.
Did it aid that game? Because that big game particularly was a bit of a battle, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. So it was quick again. It was quick. It sped the game up. But I think from a spectacle point of view, not having a visual shot clock is a problem.
The other thing that's quite interesting about the games, I think, as Matt says, we're going to have fewer kicks into touch by the look of it. And on the other hand, there's probably going to be far more offloading in the tackle. Yeah. Interestingly, Warrington offloaded 17 times in the tackle.
I've got it written down.
Which is quite a remarkable number. Five of those came from Tom Lynham, incidentally, one of the most underestimated wingers in Super League, in my view. But, the game is gradually evolving, and I think that's always really interesting. What's fascinating about rugby league is that sometimes we make what look like minor rule changes, and they actually have a significant impact on the way the game is played. You know, the corner flag not being out of play and so is one example. The 40-20 is another. And, maybe the introduction of the shot clock is yet another. So it have interesting effects.
Let's talk about the whole derby then. Talk about spectacle. That at the end. I always love a good mascot piling on with the rest of the players. It's really good, isn't it? Yeah. We'll talk about Hull KR in a second, but Hull FC, literally 6 seconds away from no one saying 12 straight defeats. What's happening at Hull? It was going to be a decent start to the season. It's too early to say anything about Hull FC, isn't it?
And it's too early to say anything about anybody, Ben, at the moment. You've got to bear in mind that on the first weekend last season, Widnes beat Catalans 40 points to 12. That says it all about not counting the chickens before they're hatched. So, London beating Wakefield is great, but we're going to have to reserve judgment on them. And it's the same thing with the two Hull clubs. I mean, it's a big game for Hull this week, isn't it, against Castleford on Thursday night. And it's a game Hull really could do to win if they're going to get this monkey off their back of 12 successive defeats. But Castleford, Castleford had a very good win at the weekend against the Catalans, and they'll be going to Hull full of confidence, no doubt. Liam Watts had an absolutely amazing game, made, I think, 173 metres. Paul McShane was in great form as well. Castleford seemed to have started the season with a bang, and it's a tough fixture for Hull, that one.
Well, that's live on Sky on Thursday night, we should say. Hull KR, then, that's a great way to start the season, isn't it? To do it in front of your home crowd as well, Doug.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you talk about momentum in sport, and that's kick-started their momentum straight away. And just the nature of the win as well. I mean, you can't beat for a fan on the winning side, you can't beat a last-minute decisive moment, can you? No response to it, is there? I think it was summed up really nicely. I'm not encouraging swearing, but there was an old guy in the crowd on Sky that you could see making a certain gesture towards the away fans. But it showed just what it meant and how the beauty of the excitement of that moment.
Sure,
Absolutely. Great win for Hull KR.
We touched upon Warrington's offloads, and I've got it written down here. 17 of them in that game, Matthew. Saints, in comparison, had 4. That's setting out a stall there about how Warrington are going to be playing this season, it looks like.
But isn't it great? I think there was a little bit of fear when Steve Price first came in because he was very much in his opening gambit. We want to be tough to beat. We want to be defensively sound. And if you looked at the reaction, Warrington fans were like, "Oh no, we don't," because that's not the Warrington way. It's not. They've always played expansive rugby. Well, they played with some serious flair on Saturday. I mean, Blake Austin probably went under the radar a bit for his performance, but his short passing game was just phenomenal. The try that he scored came off the back of that short pass, and he looks like a player to me that's going to do a bit better.
Well, he's a good player, there's no doubt about it. And although he didn't pick up any points in either the Albert Goldthorpe medal table or the Man of Steel, did he? He didn't get a single point in any of those, I don't think. No. Because there were other good players on the pitch as well. And, they deserve them, I think. Stephen Ratchford got 3.
Stephen Ratchford.
In both tables.
Is he one of the most underrated players in Super League.
Yeah, absolutely, no doubt about it. He did win our Albert Goldthorpe medal last year.
He did.
So that's worth pointing out.
He did.
But
the thing is, he doesn't seem to get the accolades he should do. People were surprised when Stefan Ratchford had won it.
Yes, some people were.
But he's ultra consistent.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's a very consistent player, isn't he? Yeah, doesn't matter.
And that's why I won it. Yeah.
Leeds?
No.
They're playing against Warrington, aren't they? And on fire, Warrington.
Yes.
Thanks, Matthew.
Expected a lot more. I think the concern for Leeds, I mean, we had this conversation. Tui Lola here was awful. Conrad Horro played quite well, made a lot of metres. Trent Merrin apparently only gave away two penalties. It seemed more like five.
It did, really, didn't it? It gave away two crucial ones where Warrington scored.
The concern with Leeds, and I think we mentioned this last week, there are a lot of players that are deemed not good enough to play for Leeds. There was, and this everyone said they needed a clear out. They've signed players, but they've not cleared players out. They got rid of Ryan Hall and Joel Moon. And let's be honest, they aren't players that they'd want to lose.
No.
They lost Mitch Garbutt, who went on and had, as Martin said, maybe the game of his Super League career. And they lost Jimmy Kynhorst, who scored the winner for Hull KR.
Had a great game as well.
So you're looking at it and thinking, there may be issues. Let's say this, I'm already fretting about the fact I've tipped them to finish third.
Most people wouldn't have expected Leeds to win that game beforehand. I think Warrington got most of the tips of the pundits. And Leeds were well beaten in the first half, but in the second half it was 6-6. And it's quite interesting to look at the stats, because there's the result and then there's the performance. And the stats tend to say that, you know, Leeds' problem was that they missed a lot of tackles. Some of their players, you know, missed, you know, Lola here missed six tackles, Richie Myler missed five, Brett Ferris missed five, Liam Sutcliffe missed seven, Stevie Ward missed four. But the four substitutes, Brad Dwyer, James Donaldson, Olejki and Singleton, they made 89 tackles between them and didn't miss a single one between them. Mm. That's interesting, isn't it? You know, your four substitutes come on and don't miss any tackles whatsoever. That's a really interesting thing for David Ferner to think about, who should be in his starting lineup. And to be fair to Trent Merrin made 35 tackles, but also didn't miss one either. So although he gave away two penalties, defensively he wasn't a weak link in the side. So that's quite important. You know, and I think one of the really good signings for Leeds has been James Donaldson, who they've picked up, you know, fairly cheaply, I think, because Hull KR released him. I suspect Hull KR released him because James has had a history of difficult injuries. But he's a damn good player. And if he can, you know, remain free of injury, I think he's going to have a big part to play for Leeds Rhinos this year.
Well, we can play Leeds on Friday night, incidentally. That's another great TV game. But I do have to mention something on the Sky post-match interviews, which are great, by the way. You've got one player after another coming on.
Absolutely.
Head coaches coming on. It's brilliant. One of the players, I can't remember who it was, it might have been Warrington, said the word defence, which I don't know how you all... Yeah. It's...
Must have been an Aussie.
It must have been,
No, it was a Northerner.
Yeah,
I was quite.
Well, sometimes, like, sometimes nowadays they just say D.
They do say
we're good in D,
and it's really annoying.
Yeah.
So when you transcribe it, you don't want to misquote them. But every time I do it, I know that Martin will change it to defence.
Absolutely.
Strangely, I find that offensive, which is even worse, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can anyone stop Salford?
They were very good on Friday.
We touched on it last week about just the problem with Salford isn't the first 17 necessarily. It's the squad behind it. That nothing's changed, has it?
The proof was in the pudding. They were fantastic. For me, and I'm happy to say this, behind Castleford, they are the most entertaining team to watch. London might give them a run for the money for that bridesmaid position this year. But Salford are great to watch, play some really good rugby. The tries they scored, I think you've seen the highlights, haven't you?
I have, yeah, mate. So great.
Got some great tries. I've got to say, I mean, Ian Watson compared Niall Evans to Darren Lockyer. In the off-season, everyone's like, he's lost the plot.
It reminds me of Paul Anderson describing Greg Egan as Billy Slater.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, he didn't seem to bother Niall, because he went and scored a hat-trick and set one up. He was outstanding.
Good away following as well. That was highlighted.
1,700,
Really good.
I'd love to see Salford really boosting their crowds this year at the AJ Bell Stadium. You know, they've done a lot of really good PR work during the closed season. I hope that translates into bigger crowds. Starting this Sunday, when, of course, they play London Broncos, second versus third in the league. Who would have thought that would have happened a week ago?
Why are Salford second, by the way?
Warrington's points... exactly the same points difference as Warrington, but Warrington have a better points percentage. 26-6 is better than 34-14. In other words,
I don't understand why we complicate it like that.
No, well,
they scored more tries.
It's got more points. Yeah. It would be a lot easier way to do it.
Which would encourage point scoring as well.
It would do, but that's how it is at the moment.
Thank you for explaining.
So Catalans
this weekend taking on Huddersfield on Saturday. That's a Sky match. I mean, it's too early to talk about Huddersfield and Catalans. I mean, Catalans had a dreadful start to last season, then did quite well. So
Huddersfield had 10 out.
There you go.
they were poor, but when you've got
how does a team have 10 injuries before the season?
Well, that's the question, isn't it?
You know, that's really worrying for them.
Akuma Tai obviously was, because he hasn't got his clearance yet, so it was 9 injured. But you shouldn't have 9 injured before the start of the season. That is a worry.
But as we said, it is Salford against London this weekend, and let's hear now from Phil Parry from BBC Radio London. Great commentary. So let's hear what Phil's reaction was the morning after the night before.
Yeah, it was brilliant. I mean, I think it was quite an emotional day in many respects because of everything that's gone on, preceding actually the relegation and dropping out of Super League in 2014. And at that point, sort of a real fear that we didn't quite know where things were going to go with the club. And obviously David Hughes, who I spoke to after that, I mean, he had one of the biggest grins you're ever going to see on his face after the game yesterday. But sort of still supporting the club. But it really was, I think, there was a spell where we were concerned as to what was going to happen. But it's grown and developed, and there's been a lot of people involved in keeping things going and pushing things forward and sort of have that moment. The £1 million game was an extraordinary event on its own, really. I mean, I wasn't able to get out to Toronto, but I watched it down at the club with my 12-year-old son, and it was an extraordinary evening for everyone down there who was watching. But then yesterday was a big day, and I think opening 10-15 minutes, you could sense that there was that, and I think Wardy talked about it afterwards and the players referred to it, that there was just that, maybe that sort of slight nervousness, the butterflies, there were one or two tentative tackles, one or two moments where you just thought, okay, they're just feeling their way in. But once they got to grips with the game, I thought, you know, they felt as if they were at home, they felt as if they were here, and they're, you know, at Super League level on merit. And I think that, you know, the confidence grew, and to beat a good team, and let's face it, Wakefield are a good team, to beat a good team on the home paddock in front of biggest crowd that Ealing's hosted since rugby league's been there, I think was a really, really big afternoon. I think it maybe helps with the belief, it helps with the confidence, and it was just a great way to start the season.
It feels like London are very important to the sport of rugby league, and I've spoken to many a community club in the southeast, and they've all said the same, that we need a London Super League club. I spoke to London Scholars, we need a London Super League club. We've got a London Super League club now. What's the mood like with the sport now, and especially after the weekend just gone?
I think it was you're right. I mean, the grassroots and the development of the sport has gone on, and I suppose that the work has still gone on regardless of where the club were for the past 4 years. And there's so much good work that goes on. My boy plays for Richmond Warriors, and that's a great little club. And okay, you don't have maybe as many clubs in the area, but you know, there is, you get a real sense of what the community and how that's building. And having a Super League club gives, there's a couple of elements I think that are really important. A, it's the profile, and again, that takes work, and I know there's a massive discussion obviously within the sport about how the sport can sell itself and push itself, but there were some people there yesterday watching who are new, you know, haven't necessarily been down or seen Super League, and you know, with a home, if they can build a home in sort of the Ealing area again, then that would be very positive. But it also gives pathways to players. And, you know, we saw, I know Kieran Dixon has been away and come back, but, you know, he's come through the system. And Alex Walker, who everyone's talking about, has come through the system. And we've seen other players. And it was quite interesting. You know, I've talked to a lot of people down there about, you know, players who have gone on and have played elsewhere. McCarthy Scarsbrick, Tony Club, Dan Sargentson, lads who've come through the system and gone and played for clubs in the north. But it would be great if that actually that pathway is there for developing talent, for players to come through, players who are playing like the Brixton Bulls were there yesterday as a guard of honour. And I know, you know, they've got under sevens, under eights, you know, kids that they, even at that age, if they can see that they can play at the top level of the sport, up against international quality players, amongst international quality players, then it just helps develop that sport and all the work that goes on with all the community clubs and with the grassroots to have that pathway through to a Super League club and just to build the profile. And when it comes to the work that's gone on, actually just working within the local community in West London, in the Ealing area, building sponsorships, building a relationship, you know, that's started, and that if that can just grow and grow and grow, there's a lot of untapped potential, I think. And you know, I think it's you know, it's very positive. Everyone's talked about the Toronto story and everything that's going on there with the work that the Wolfpack are doing. But I think there's almost this time around as well that with the Broncos, they've earned their spot by blood, sweat, and tears in Super League, and it almost feels a little bit you feel it even more proud of the situation this time. And I think people can get behind that, and it will help grow the sport even more just with that profile. And I think people enjoy coming down as well. They'll enjoy coming to watch rugby down there.
Just before you go, Phil, just a mention as well for the Arsenal Stadium announcement. Yeah. It's a big deal, isn't it?
It's a massive deal. And again, when we spoke about that, it was confirmed, I think, that England, you know, fingers crossed, should happen. No reason why not. That if England were to be in the semi-final, then it would be the semi-final that England play in that would be at the Emirates. So I think that will help push the sport. It will be the first time that a non-footballing event takes place at the Emirates. It's a beautiful stadium, but it's got great sight lines. It's got that bowl-like atmosphere. And it's fantastic, I think, that London's going to have that opportunity. But again, it's just about building that awareness, I think, in the capital. And we've got a long time to build up to that. And so hopefully, you know, the tickets, if we can sell the Emirates out, which Arsenal have even failed to do in recent times, haven't they? Let's face it. If we can sell the Emirates out and make that an absolute massive occasion, combined with the fact that obviously the wheelchair World Cup down at the Copper Box, and we'll give some as well to that element of the sport. And having three World Cups all running concurrently, I think that's a really good idea. And if we can make an event out of that semi-final, I think that would be tremendous. And again, it sort of gives everyone a real focus. So I know some of us were greedy and say, well, we'd like some more games down here. And I think with Jamaica in the World Cup, I think it would have been amazing. Maybe not the Emirates, but to put a Jamaica game on at maybe a slightly smaller stadium, but stick it at Brentford's new ground that will be up and running by then with a 17,000 capacity. I could only imagine the atmosphere that would generate. But
if anything, Phil, just to save the bus fare for Jermaine Coleman more than anything.
Yeah, exactly. And one or two, and, you know, there's a couple of other lads. But yeah, but I just think, I mean, wherever Jamaica play, they're going to bring something to the World Cup anyway, which is fantastic. And obviously, we've got a young lad at London who scored the winning try that put him into the finals anyway. So, I mean, there's some great stories down here. But I just think having something at the Emirates and making that big event, just again, I think it just helps the sport. I think it just helps give the sport extra credence down here to those of us who bang the drum.
And Phil, just before you go, it's be rude of me not to allow you a good old-fashioned plug for BBC Radio London and their sports department. Lots of great coverage of the Broncos.
Our intention this year is to have Broncos games covered, either by us or by our colleagues in other stations up north. I'll try and get to as many games as I possibly can. The home games, we will obviously provide coverage either online or on a radio station. So, you know, we've maintained our coverage as much as we possibly could. The budget didn't stretch to me getting out to Toronto, which is a real shame, but because that would have been some occasion, to be honest. But I don't know. I'm still working on whether I can get up to Salford, because again, you know, both teams off the back of really good wins on the opening weekend, that would be a cracker, I would have thought, next Sunday.
So Phil Parry there from BBC Radio London. London Broncos against Wakefield on Sunday. I think Wakefield had a 12-point lead twice in that one, Doug.
I think 12 points and 6 points, I think it was.
No, they led by twice.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, no, I got it out of your paper.
Better massive.
I mean,
and then it all went wrong. Yeah.
Chris Chester must be scratching his head though at that one, mustn't he?
Yeah, in a lot of ways. Yeah, I mean, a lot said about Wakefield before the season. They've obviously had two fifth place finishes in the last couple of years. Everybody was talking about them kicking on. very early to say anything, obviously, like you said before, but, you know, slightly concerning about the defence at Whitfield, the D, shall we say, for Matty's benefit.
I don't want to start this trend off, lots Doug. Of that's all right.
Lots of soft tries going in. Lots of people on Twitter couldn't believe what they were seeing from, you know, from
I don't think there were soft tries. Yeah, I think they were really well created. If you've seen the highlights, London's tries were brilliantly created, and, you know, there wasn't a great deal Wakefield could do about them, in my view. You know, you've got to give London every credit for the way they played, and they just outplayed Wakefield in the end. And, you know, whether they'll be able to continue doing that as the season unfolds is a $64,000 question. Yeah, yeah.
Wakefield, though, are taking on St Helens this Sunday. There's easier
just who you wouldn't want to be playing, yeah.
Well, Wakefield have a history of doing well against St Helens. You know, Wakefield have often been St Helens' bogey club, and they'll obviously be hoping that that's the case this weekend. And, you know, you wouldn't think it would be because, of course, you know, that St Helens front row of, you know, Wormsley, Roby and Luke Thompson just looks so impressive to me. I can't see many of the clubs being able to stand up to that, personally. So, you know, but you know, stranger things have happened. Wakefield have had great wins against St Helens in the past. And I always remember back in 1999 when Wakefield played Saints, I think it was at the eighth game of the season. Saints were being coached by Ellery Hanley. They'd won their first seven in a row, and they went to Barnsley where they played that game.
Wasn't it? Yeah,
and Wakefield beat them with the two March brothers having a great game.
It was a
tremendous win for Wakefield. So, you know, there are all sorts of potential things that could happen in that game.
I think we can all agree a great weekend.
Mm. Absolutely.
Round one, superb. You could come back for the second week, no problem at all. Championship kicked off this past weekend. An average attendance, I believe, of 3,000 per game. And on Tuesday, I caught up with League Express's very own Championship oracle, is Gareth Walker.
I think there's a lot to be positive about there. When you look down the list of attendances there, it's hugely encouraging for the competition, I think. When, you know, Widnes is starting off with a 4,000 plus crowd. Now, I was at Super League games with them last year where there wasn't that many Widnes supporters there, certainly. York, again, got over 2,500. And then you see over 6 at Bradford. Great number, almost 3 at Lee. And probably one of the most impressive ones for me was 1,200 at Sheffield. You know, that's way above and beyond what they've been averaging in recent years, and a real encouraging sign for them. So people were watching Championship Rugby League again, and as always, you know, by the sound of it, the action on the field has lived up to all expectations.
The big attendance was obviously at Bradford against Featherstone. A thrilling match there. What's been the standout result for you this past on Sunday?
I think result-wise, I think Lee beating Toulouse is a pretty big marker for them. You know, they have signed some quality players, some players that have been in Super League, so I did expect them to be challenging for the playoffs. But first up, they have got a brand new team there, so first up to go and beat a full-time team that's been together now for, what, 3-4 years, that Toulouse side, I think that was pretty impressive. So in terms of result, I think that was the one that caught my eye the most. I mean, Barrow winning at Batley is another one, though. You know, Barrow's away form over the last few years has kind of been their Achilles heel. Batley, one of the toughest places to go, and they were quite confident about their prospects this year, I think. So for Barrow to go to Batley and win, it has laid down a marker. And I think those two were the most surprising results, shall we say.
And we mentioned Widnes's result as well. Obviously, Widnes beating Halifax. And I'd just like to mention Anthony Gellin. Superb social media skills in the lead-up to that game. And a fantastic impression being left from Sunday by Anthony.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's contributed to what seems like a dramatic shift in mood at Widnes Vikings in a matter of weeks almost. You know, there's been a lot of
hours,
doom and gloom.
Hours, I'd say.
Yeah, probably, yeah, from kick-off to then. But for over 4,000 people to go there and see them take apart, you know, a Halifax team that's consistently been one of the top Championship clubs in the last few years will give people a lot of hope. And as you mentioned, Anthony Gellin, great social media stuff before the game. And then to be pictured with a young kid, he's come off the field there, a young lad's asked for his autograph, and Gellin goes and sits in the stand and watches the last 4 or 5 minutes of the game with that young lad. And it's captured on camera as well. That's just fantastic. And I think that will help lift the mood around Widnes. You know, they've had a lot of off-field stuff swirling around all during the close season. Now they can start to talk about rugby again. And under Kieran Purtell, it looks like they're going to have an exciting team to cheer this season.
Absolutely. And obviously the match on Sky on Sunday, it was a good place to start, I think, with their championship coverage. Booth and Crescent, York City Knights 0, Toronto Wolfpack 14. Over 2,500 people there. Three sides of the stadium opened up for attendance. I think Brian McDermott freely mentioned on his post-match interview just how well York gave him a run for their money there. So I don't think Toronto are going to have it all their own way this season by the looks of it.
No, definitely. And York are a promoted club, let's not forget, as well. So for them to be so close to a team that people are, you know, talking about justifiably as strong favourites for the competition, arguably a Super League side on paper, for them to compete for so long like that is a feather in York's cap despite the defeat. You know, Toronto scored in the 78th minute their third try. So to only concede two tries against that team for the vast majority of the game is a top effort, and will encourage them for the battles that lie ahead, I'm sure.
Unbelievably, there was only six matches, not the full seven. That's because it snowed a lot in Rochdale at the weekend, so no Rochdale v Dewsbury. But Rochdale back in action this Sunday, live on Sky, against the aforementioned Toronto. I spoke to Cal Forster this week. It's tricky to start your season like this for the Hornets. I mean, what are you expecting this weekend from them hosting the Wolfpack?
I think we should describe them as mid-table Rochdale, shouldn't we? Because even though they didn't play, there are several teams below them. So
that's true. You're right. Yeah.
I'm sure Cal Forster will take that. But it's not ideal to have your first game postponed, is it? It's not the first time it's happened there. And when the adverse weather does come in, you know, the area around Rochdale and the edge of the Pennines does tend to cop for it. So that's hard. And then to go straight into a Toronto match as well makes it doubly tough. But, you know, the odds were stacked against them last year when they played Toronto at home early on. It was in March last year. And they only lost by a point then, 17-18. So pushed them really close again at a Wolfpack side then that was expected to run over the top of everyone. So I think that the Hornets players that played in that game will take a bit of heart from it. They'll probably take a bit of heart from watching what York did. And although it's a massive first test for them, I don't think they'll go into that match completely overawed or anything like that.
And just before you go, Gareth, obviously, you know, it's been a great start to the Championship season. League One kicks off next week. You know, you've got your own column there in League Express. What can we expect from you in the coming weeks when it comes to coverage of Championship and League One and that kind of thing?
Well, this week in League Express, I wrote about the debut of Joe Bullock for Wigan in Super League, who'd signed from Barrow, and just saying that this is the latest kind of example of what top Championship players we've got and how they can make that step up to Super League if they're given the opportunity. Now, I'd written that column before I headed down to London on Sunday to watch their match against Wakefield. And although I wrote about Joe Bullock, I could have written about Eddie Batty, who spent his entire career in the Championship there with Sheffield and then London. He's got this chance in Super League now. And he was most people's best player on the field in his first match. So I just think that even though I was at Super League matches in those two cases, it just showed to me again what top standard of players we've got in the Championship. And I'm sure there'll be another Joe Bullock, another Eddie Batty emerging from the competition this year.
So Gareth Walker there joining us on the Total Rugby League show. Wins for Widnes, Bradford, Sheffield, Barrow and Lee. Crowds of 4K at Widnes, 6K at Bradford. Lee had 3,000 there. Sheffield had 1,200 there.
Excellent.
Yeah, which is great. The Sheffield one's probably...
I mean, they did a lot of work before that, promoting that game, but, you know...
I thought Sheffield attendance was the standout one.
There were some fascinating results all round. Lee beating Toulouse. Bradford beating Featherstone when Featherstone had quite a lot of Leeds Rhinos dual registered players playing with them. Again, an outstanding result. And Widnes, you know, Widnes looking very smart against Halifax.
And a great attendance at York as well, live on Sky Sports.
Absolutely.
And a win for Toronto, but they had to work for it.
They did. I've got to admit, Ben, I was a bit disappointed with Toronto's attack.
Mm.
I don't want to take anything away from York, but I know it's first round, but for the amount of ball they had, I thought they looked fairly
pedestrian. Yeah.
But there were some interest. Lee's probably the standout. Mm-hmm. To beat Toulouse, I don't think anyone saw that.
Just to say as well, a big get well soon to Will Hope. A horrific injury.
Absolutely.
Obviously, that's being looked into, so we can't really go into too much detail. But
something went wrong there, didn't it? And he was left waiting at least 3 hours to be attended to when he'd had a horrific leg break and so on, and that just isn't acceptable.
But he didn't even get attended to in the end, did he? He had to. His teammates had to stretch him onto the team coach.
Took him
to Salford Royal Hospital.
No, ironically, that's called Hope Hospital locally.
Is it?
Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah.
Me and you, Matthew, cover non-league football, and Doug as well, and you don't get ambulances at certain levels of the game. And
it's an expensive business having an ambulance at a football or a rugby match.
And I'm sure we've all been to matches where there's been a player injured and no ambulance comes. Mm. It's
and the number of times you actually need one, is it cost effective to do it every game? There's lots of issues.
But to be told that his injury wasn't a priority when he's got several breaks, dislocations, torn ligaments.
That's the thing that's worrying, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, if he dislocated his ankle,
it was a very serious injury.
If it was something that, you know, you don't know the complications involved in something like that.
Well, get well soon, Will, and like we said, it is being looked into, so I'm sure that'll develop as the weeks go on. But that's nearly it for this week's show, but there's just enough time for one last interview, and an article in League Express caught my eye regarding the Oldham Rugby League Heritage Trust and their remarkable collection of historic memorabilia, which is about to be donated to the Gallery Oldham. And on Tuesday, I caught up with Michael Turner from the Trust, and here he is going through what's in the collection.
Match shirts, caps, medals, posters, programmes, booklets, all sorts of, you know, we've even got an old scrum cap that one of the lads used to wear back in the 1930s. All this sort of stuff, you know, which to some people might be a bit, why are they bothering with that sort of thing? But to us, it's the heritage of the Oldham Club in particular and the game in general. From the perspective of the Oldham Rugby League Heritage Trust, this is great news for... We believe that we've got one of the best memorabilia collections in the rugby world, either code. And the fact that the Heritage Lottery Fund have given us this funding, it means that we're able to protect it for the generations of Oldhamers and rugby league fans in general throughout the years. Some of the material we have in the collection dates back to the Victorian era. As you can imagine, you know, the ravages of time. When these items aren't looked after properly, they can cause considerable damage.
Where currently is it at the moment? Is it just scattered around people's houses? I mean, where is it?
It's basically scattered around the houses of the trustees of the trust. And we have, at various times, had it on exhibition in the gallery, which is a fine building, state-of-the-art stuff. But, you know, we want a more permanent exhibition site for the collection. Now, that's not to say it's all going to be on exhibition all the time. It won't be, because that would be a massive space. But when the gallery's refurbishment is done sometime over the next 18 months, we're going to be afforded a little space to show some of our collection, which we can then rotate so that over time all of the items can be seen. You know, we've got match shirts from the pre-Northern Union era, pre-1895, right up to like Andy Goodway's tour shirt from 1984, right up to the lads who are playing now, you know.
And just a mention for the Trust more generally, like you say, I mean, it's a cracking collection there, but it all stems with this idea about, you know, the heritage of rugby league, not just the past, but also sharing that for the future and keeping the flame alive. I mean, how could people get involved with the Trust?
Part of it, Ben, we've got loads and loads of documents, mostly match programmes, going right back to the 1900s. 1907, I think, is the oldest club programme that we've got. And we're going to scan all these documents, every page of every one, and hopefully make them available online through our revamped website, which should all be in place by the end of the year. But this is a long, laborious job, as I'm sure you probably were, scanning documents. Although it's very beneficial, it's quite boring to do. So if anyone can give us a couple of hours sometime, we've already had some volunteers come forward to do this, and we've got a couple of scanners going to be put in place at the local interest centre in Oldham to get on with this work. But I'm sure through the months to come, any volunteers won't be turned away if they want to do a few hours scanning for us. Then there's the more serious part, which is the packaging of the shirts and caps, etc. They're going to be all packaged up in acid-free boxes lined with acid-free paper, so to prevent any further deterioration to them.
And to get in contact, it's the website's ORL-heritagetrust.org. Toulouse.co.uk. Well, it's been great having you on, Michael. It sounds really, really exciting. And like you say, it's a cracking collection. So congratulations to everyone at the Trust for keeping it going and getting this bit of grant funding too. Just before you go as well, looking forward to the League One season kicking off in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely, can't wait. We play Workington in the first match on Feb 17th and we're all rearing to go here, but we can't wait for the season to start.
So Michael Turner there from the Oldham Rugby League Heritage Trust. I love that, by the way. That's lovely.
Me too,
stuff. Victorian caps and everything.
I've spent hours looking at it.
Amazing, isn't it?
Right, that's nearly it for the show. But a couple of parish notices and matters arising. The power rankings are now out on TotalRL.com. Yes. I was looking through it before. And again, Salford not top. I don't know what they have to do. You've gone with Lee Centurions.
Well, for me, if you look at results out and out, London is obviously a fantastic result. But some people did think they could catch Wakefield cold. Mm. I don't think really anyone gave Lee any hope of beating Toulouse.
No.
And they did. So for me, I thought Lee was... And given what Lee have been through as well, I thought they deserved it.
Mm. It is worth pointing out that Gary Schofield predicted London would win, which is, you know, making up for last year when he said they'd come 10th in the championship.
I don't think it quite makes up for it, but it's a step in the right direction.
I think it was on the 40-20 show where loads of London fans are going, no, don't give us goodwill, Gary, please.
Yeah.
a special mention to Ray French as well, who's retiring.
Yes, I mean, what an incredible history he's had in rugby league. You know, I recall being at a game back in the 1960s when Saints played at Wakefield in the Challenge Cup and beat Wakefield 10-0. And Ray French had an absolute stormer in that game. And I remember booing him for most of the game, and when he came off the pitch. So, you know, but I've finally forgiven him, I've got to say. But, no, he's had an incredible career. He's actually a really great radio broadcaster, in my view. You know, if you listen to Radio Merseyside and some of Ray's commentaries, they will be missed by Radio Merseyside, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, you know, as a BBC commentator, he was a guy that's an hour younger that I always heard on the BBC. And credit to him, he's had a great career on and off the pitch, and wish him well in whatever he's planning on doing next.
Well, happy retirement to Ray French. Also, the Challenge Cup third round draw next week will be taking place in Coventry,
yes,
which I think's nice as well. That'll be on the red button. Speaking of the red button, this weekend it's Milford Marlins against Lot Lane, and our league, which has got loads of stuff now regarding the Championship and League One and stuff, that'll be covering Wigan St Patrick's and the Great Britain Police.
Mm.
And finally, how influential is this show? Last week we were talking about Liverpool Stanley. All of a sudden, there's
some
musings and rumours and rumblings about Liverpool. No one's said Liverpool Stanley as a name yet.
Tried to take anything away from it.
No, don't, Matthew. It's lovely.
It just comes across as another publicity stunt, doesn't it?
Well, you know, I'd love to be able to take it seriously. Put it that way.
Yeah.
Well, we'll wait and see. But if it does happen, TotalRL.com. We'll have that news first.
Indeed.
Just before we go, just a plug for any. Is there any work coming out this next week or so that's of vital importance and can be beautifully plugged here?
There is an interesting conversation, interesting meeting taking place today among Championship clubs. I think it'll be positive, right? You know, sorting out Summer Bash Grand Final £1 million game as it is. So we'll have all the details from that and. It's only Wednesday. We always have this. Me and Martin always have this conversation on a Tuesday. And what are we going to have in the paper this week? And there's always a slight panic. And then it gets to Friday and it's like, how on earth are we going to fit all this in this week?
Good news about Keighley, I think that's the other thing.
Yeah. There's an interesting article that will be in League Express next Monday about the Manchester Rangers Rugby League Club, which is, you know, revealing, you know, the background to what's happening there, which is a bit sad, really. But I think it'll make very interesting reading.
Well, that's the end of the Total Rugby League show for this week. Remember, you can get this show via the Total RL website, on Audio Boom, on Spotify and on iTunes, and a whole raft of other podcast providers. Martin Sadler, a big thank you for joining us this week.
Thank you.
Big thank you to Matthew Shaw.
Thanking you.
And Doug Thompson, always a pleasure. But that's it for this week's show, and wherever you're going this weekend, to cheer on your rugby league side, make sure that you have fun. Bye-bye.